you can start using this sensation of fear as almost like, that is where I want to go. So now instead of moving away from risk, moving away from fear, you start programming yourself that fear is the guiding post, is the light. Where you're afraid of is where I should move towards.
That's Elon Ferdman, one half of a dynamic duo with his brother Guy, and this is the All Things Risk podcast. Welcome to another episode of the All Things Risk podcast. My name is Ben Cattaneo. I'm your host. This is my show. This is where we get to go deep and long form using the lenses of risk, uncertainty, and randomness to get into all kinds of topics. My hope is that you find these conversations not only insightful and possibly entertaining, but that they also help you perhaps take some risks in your own lives, or they give you perhaps a slightly different perspective on something in a way that you find useful. At any rate, I want to get right into this week's episode. My guests are Elon and Guy Ferdman. They're two brothers, they're coaches, and they run something called Satori Prime. And this is a business, a program that helps people. And both Elon and Guy worked in the financial services industry. They were working separately, and they were affected by the financial crisis of 2007 and 08. And shortly after that, they decided to make a number of changes. They discovered things like authenticity, purpose, fear, and risk, and that led to going into business together and starting this thing called Satori Prime, which we get into in the episode. And we talk about all of that in what I think is an excellent conversation. I don't want to go into too many details here because I think the conversation speaks for itself, but we talk about internal and external motivations. We get into uncertainty and predictability in our lives. We talk about self-worth. They have both a very interesting take on the concept of fear, which I think underpins a lot of the discussion. Letting things come to you, which is a very interesting concept that Guy and Elon advocate. And I'd rather not say too much more. I just want to get right into it. So here are Guy and Elon Ferdman of Satori Prime. Enjoy. Guy, welcome to the All Things Risk podcast. It's a pleasure to have you both on. This is going to be a lot of fun, I'm sure.
Awesome. Yes. And we're happy to be here for sure.
So you guys are you run something called Satori Prime. And I want to know the origin story of that. And maybe actually before we get into that, you guys are working together. You're brothers. Who are you guys? How do you explain yourselves to new folks?
He also just gave me an idea, bro. We should do like a comic strip Satori Prime genealogy story where cool. We just like come out of the muck and the ooze and just suddenly yeah. just are like superhuman Satori. We have to figure out who's Satori and who's Prime though. Yeah.
And our powers combine.
Yeah, exactly. It just turns into like an infinity symbol. And all right,
that's awesome. All right, so the way best to explain what we are is primarily we're coaches, we're speakers, we're entrepreneurs. As far as our brother, you know, people always ask like, well, how is it to run a business with your brother? I have to say it's hands down one of the coolest things. Guy and I definitely have a very unique relationship even before we started the business. Yeah. I think if anything, this has made our relationship so much stronger on so many different levels. So Satori Prime, not to take you too far back, I actually was in commercial real estate financing. I started a company in 2004. We grew really, really large in a very short span of time. And just as I saw that growth, I was like, Guy, you should come work here. So Guy and I actually started working even back then since 2005, 2006. And we met the demise. We kind of survived about 2 years after the economic collapse, and then lost everything. And when I mean everything, like guy selling his car, moving in with my parents, my house being foreclosed on, and not being able to pay the mortgage for 2+ years. It was not a pretty time. And then in the midst of all this, guy goes to me, "Hey, would you be interested to start a business with me?" And I thought, well, I'm living on unemployment checks. I have a baby on the way. Yeah, that sounds like a small idea. So we did that, and we kind of started asking ourselves some really important questions when we lost everything. Mm. And it's odd to even say this, because I don't think now I'm looking back, I'm like, God, those were kind of amazing questions and yet super dumb at the time. And that is, you know, what would you do if money wasn't a thing? And just so we're very, very clear, money was very, very much a thing at that time.
Yes.
And we just thought, look, we're going to start something new, build a new something. What do we want to invest our time in? Because the next, you know, 3, 5, 10 years, we're going to spend building this thing. What do we want that thing to be? And the one thing that Guy and I just loved, because we started it back in 2003, was personal development and coaching. And it's something that just fulfilled our hearts more than anything else. And we thought, you know, like, that's something that we could do for free for the rest of our lives. Like, it just feeds us. And we decided that we were going to build a business all around it. And in order to do that, we realized that what we need to do is learn some marketing skills. So we spent probably a good part of 4 years getting really, really good at marketing. And Satori Prime, when we first launched, was actually not a personal development coaching company. We were doing a lot of marketing training.
Okay.
Because it set us free. You know, in a span of 2 years, we went from, you know, me almost being homeless, guy moved out to San Diego and started building a beautiful life. It just completely revolutionized our life. And then now, since 2016, we kind of put all of that marketing stuff on either in systems or autopilot. And now we're out there coaching and doing what we kind of intended to do when we first started this thing in 2011.
Very cool. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there, and I've had this type of conversation with other people before, but it's when that hitting rock bottom. So I'm not saying that you guys were completely rock bottom, but you know, when
we were close.
Okay. So some tumultuous event happens that sometimes, you know, that causes a bit of reflection, and it allows people to, it frees people. And I love that. I don't know if you guys like the movie Fight Club at all.
Oh my God.
Favorite movie of all time.
That's our favorite movie.
You know what I'm talking about, then you know, it's only when we've lost everything that we're free to challenge, or I forget the exact quote, but
everything.
Exactly. So what types of reflections did you take when you were in that space that maybe you didn't have before, you weren't able to think about before?
I think when you're like in the flow of everything, you don't take pause, right? If you've been on in a relationship for a while, it's like everything creates a bubble, you know. Every aspect of life creates a bubble, whether it's a relationship with somebody or a relationship to a business, a relationship to your location. You're kind of like in your own bubble, and until, like, we had this process, it's like destroy to create, right? So it's like you need to, in life, it's difficult, I think, to take pause and say, you know, like, take account of where you are, because we're always on the go of our lives and where we think we need to be going. And then this, like, event comes along, sometimes small, because life is trying to teach it to you in the micro, really gentle. And if you don't learn it at the gentle levels, it gets a little bit less gentle until, like, the event is, like, seismic. I think for 2008, that event for a lot of people was seismic. And it was kind of cool in that way. I think if you look at the traditional conservative world at large, that's what people are all upset about. How come the jobs aren't coming back? How come the jobs aren't coming back, right? Yeah. But the jobs aren't coming back because of automation, because of robotics and all that stuff. Like, those jobs are gone. So the opportunity for a lot of people, and us included, is like, how do you retool so that you not only are, but feel valuable? And you know, Elon kind of had mentioned about online marketing, and the reason it's like it sets you free, and if, for those that can't see this, I'm like air quoting, it sets you free because we had, you know, it's everybody has ideas. Everybody's a genius. In my perspective, everybody's a genius in their own right. Different resources, though. And I think marketing is one of those things that if you truly get it, and it's actually quite simple, but if you truly get it, those ideas that have percolated in your head, stop feeling like a fantasy. Oh, that would be a nice thing to do. And it gives you a system to start implementing very quickly. And marketing allows you to see a lot of how different business models work and then how it's implemented through marketing. So for us, like when we got involved in that world, two things were really clear. The people we were around were doing personal development. And at least to us, it seemed like we were way further down the path. Mm-hmm. Because they were like kind of, it was like introductory personal development stuff they were talking about. And they were making like crazy loot, you know, like in this affiliate marketing space. So I thought to myself, I'm like, well, if the correlation between being successful here is like mindset, like having that mindset shift, then for anybody who's been an entrepreneur, you know that the size of your business is in direct correlation to your own growth. And that's what's so beautiful about a business is you get a measuring stick. Where in life it's difficult. Like you might say, me and you have a great conversation based on some like spiritual principles, and we see the quality of our relationship go up, right? But that's like an intrinsic feeling that you get. You can't really quantify that. You're like, yeah, this relationship feels a lot better than it used to. Where business allows you to put data points and like quantify growth. And I think that's what's so beautiful about being in business is that it like shows you your limitations and it pushes your edges. And you can see like, wow, when I apply this principle, like this area of my life is going like this. Like, what if I apply it over here? This area goes like this. And I think that's a huge opportunity. So to go back to like the core question, we need that interjection. You know, whether you believe that interjection is coming from circumstances or their circumstances are being performed by a greater power, it's like these lessons have been in our ethos for a long time. It took an event like that for us to be like, okay, am I going to wait for this thing to finish up, you know, this event around the world that's causing calamity, and then bounce back into this world that I know and try to make money? And as somebody who's been in the developmental space like for a while, I know that thinking about action is where most people get stuck because they think that thinking about action is being in action. So I'm like, when 2 years had passed and the economy hadn't gotten any better, you have to consider like, okay, well, what if it doesn't? You know, what if this is the next 10 or 20 years because we don't know? Fine, that's not historically accurate. But even so, like, we don't know what's coming next. So you're either going to allow circumstances to determine the direction and driving force of your life.
Yep.
Or you're going to say, like, here's where I want to grow. And when I looked at it personally, like, I could speak for himself. But when I looked at it personally, like, I loved our company and I hated the industry. Because it's a
previous job.
Yeah, right. I'm talking about the banking industry.
Right.
Because we were the lender, and when you have money, everybody wants it, right? And that means egomaniacs. Like, just, I remember getting on the phone with people and be like, do you know who I am? I'm like, I don't. I'm sorry. And I don't know why that means we can't do business with one another. You know, and like stuff like that. So I was like, on one part of our lives, we'd been coaching for maybe, I don't know, 6 to 7, 8 years of that time. Free. I didn't even know people got paid for doing that kind of stuff. And on this part of my life, I'm just dealing with assholes, basically. And I'm watching on this other half, like where we're doing the transformational work, like people like building their dreams, you know, like their relationships are upgrading, their health is upgrading. And I'm sitting there going, what am I doing with my life? You know, I'm so determined to be here. I love doing this kind of work with people. Like, I would do this till the day I die. Why wouldn't I build some kind of system around this that allows me to feel the value that I have in the world, allows me to deliver value to other people, creates these beautiful partnerships and relationships that are so fruitful? I'm like, if that takes me 10 years to figure out how to monetize that, I would do it. I would do it for no money anyway. That's what I was doing. So that's kind of what happened.
It's a lot of good stuff there. Let me explore a couple things. One was, and I think we can tie it into success and entrepreneurship and some of the people that you help. One was around, I remember that time, and I went to a conference. It was an academic conference. It was a year after or 6 months after the big crash of 2008. And someone asked, there was an economist on this panel, and it was a group of bankers, just like the kind of people that you were working with. And one of the guys, he asks, when is growth coming back? When are we going back to the growth? And the guy and the economist just looked at him and just, you know, dead stare and just said, it's not coming back.
Yeah.
And you can, I would have loved to have filmed the look on the guy's face who asked that question, because I think we're, from a risk perspective, we fear loss more than we value gain. It's just it's a human trait, and it manifests in risk taking as well. And what I think you're describing, Guy, is you kind of shifted from an external to kind of an internal locus of control, if you like, when you explained, okay, well, this stuff isn't coming. Let's park this, you know, let's not wait for the economy to bounce back or whether or not interest rates are going to do whatever. Let's actually focus on the internal side of things and what I want. And then, you know, then I can move forward. And that to me sounds like a really powerful lesson for a lot of people. And you probably bring it out in your coaching and after that.
Yeah. I was saying that, our whole methodology is that people tend to focus on the external.
Yeah.
So say, for example, they have a job that they don't like. Okay. What do? They go and look at, okay, my job doesn't work for me. I'm going to go get another job. And the entire time, what are they? They're miserable. Mm. Right. And then they finally go get that job, and what? They get really, really excited. And that excitement lasts how long? A month, two, three, before the same shit finds them. Yeah. And they're like, I'm miserable again. Well, guess what? People generally don't deal with the thing that's causing the issue. So our training and the way that we work with our clients is looking under the surface at the roots. The roots are what are causing that fruit. You have a peach tree in your garden. I don't care what you do to that tree. It will never produce oranges for you. Ever. Right? The only way is to actually go down, plant new seeds, create new root system, and then that's going to give you that peach. So it's the same thing. Like, the only work for human beings to do is internal. That famous line, the only way out is in.
Right.
That's the truth to anything you want, because otherwise all you're dealing with is these external factors. And that's the reason that most people have lives where it's one problem after the next problem, and then they fix that problem and another problem and another problem, instead of, you know, like weeds in a garden. You can cut the weeds all you want, they're going to keep growing. That's what they do. But if you go out there and, like, you physically take them out of the ground one by one, they don't grow back. And that's the work that we do with our clients, and that's why people can accelerate their growth and accelerate their ability to manifest that which they truly want, because they're not focused on constantly trying to put Band-Aids over the things that, quote unquote, aren't working for them.
Yeah, that is really powerful stuff. I've had people who are travel experts, right? And I've done a lot of travel. I've been, you know, a lot of this resonates with me, because the one comment you made about finding another job, what do people do? Yeah, they say, well, I do this. This is my line of work. Maybe I should work for a competitor, right? So I'll go and get, you know, a job in the same business in the same area. Maybe I'll make 10% more than what I was making before, and it'll be better. And of course, it isn't. But the similar thing with sometimes. People who say I'm gonna move to another country, or I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna travel, but the one variable that stays constant is you. So, yep. So it's really really profound profound stuff. Where did the name? Did you just come up with Satori Prime from the get go, or did you build to that, or where did that come from?
So Satori Prime, Satori means a moment of sudden enlightenment, and it's a word I read. Probably like in 2005, we actually used that word when we built a couple of hedge funds back in my finance world days. Mm-hmm. And when Guy and I were building our business, everyone at the time that was going online seemed to build their business around their name. So it's like blah, blah, .com or work with so-and-so.com. And our last name isn't exactly sexy. So we didn't want to do, you know, work with the Ferdman brothers or anything like that. We just really liked it, but we wanted something after Satori. And I think we had just come back from watching one of the new Transformers movies, and Optimus Prime was like a childhood figure in our lives.
Right.
And we were like, Satori Prime, that sounds kind of cool. And in our head, you know, Prime meant like best or number one or things like that. And we just kind of rolled with it. And it wasn't until about 3.5-4 months later, we're on a webinar, we're doing this training, and somebody asked that question, you know, what does Satori Prime mean? And I was like, you know what? I never actually looked up the definition of Prime. So I go on there, I type it in, and Prime means a moment of greatest strength, vigor, or financial success in one's life. So Satori Prime actually means a moment of enlightenment to your moment of greatest strength, vigor, and financial success.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah, that's exactly. Really, that's what we thought. We were like, huh? So it's the name found us, basically.
Yeah, it's funny how these things happen. You could sit there and, oh, we're going to brainstorm for 4 hours and come up with the perfect name, and you know, you probably won't come out of that room with the name, but you're walking around one day and then it'll hit you. That's interesting. And it also links back to, I've listened to a couple of your podcasts and your approach to certain things, and you're very big on letting allowing the kind of, you call it the universe, find what it is you're looking for. And that sounds like a very counterintuitive way of going about success. And I would like to explore this a little bit, because it sounds, and you know, do forgive me, some of my listeners might say, well, that sounds a bit woo-woo, right? So what am I supposed to do? You let the universe conspire to, you know, to show me what it is I'm meant to be doing. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that and allow you guys to explain what you mean by that and how you coach your clients to do that.
Okay, sure. We generally do not start with those kind of concepts, right? For that exact reason, because it's met with cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. Most of us are programmed around hard work. I mean, Elon and I are immigrants from Israel, so mm-hmm. we didn't grow up with a lot of money. I remember, like, we used to have a calendar in the kitchen where, like, our parents would write down like every dollar they spent, mm-hmm. so just that we had enough money at the end of the month for rent. That kind of stuff. And, you know, we did a lot of physical labor growing up. So I want you to understand that, like, our internal programming is like, work really, really hard, put it on my back, I'll take care of it and carry it. Okay. So, like, this is what we're talking about. It is learned through internal experimentation. And we got to a point. So, like, we kind of took care of the mind game for about a decade. And what that looks like is the study of phenomenology, ontological type of processes. If for those that don't know what those two mean, it's like the study of phenomena. So, like, there's certain phenomena that are happening to all of us, but when they're undistinguished, they occur like blind spots, and then you're not aware of choices. So we help people illuminate these phenomena. We do ontological processes, meaning like breakthrough type work that's similar to the way that you learn to ride and gain balance on a bicycle. Hmm. Notice that you can understand how to ride a bicycle if you've never been on it. However, the phenomenon of actually gaining balance has nothing to do with your mind being involved at all. It's not like you're like, oh, now I understand how to get balance. It's a feeling that happens within your body. Gets programmed within the system, and then you can have some kind of understanding around it, like the mechanics of it. However, like, sit with somebody who's never ridden a bike and explain to them a bicycle for 40 hours, it makes no difference in their ability to gain balance, right? Mm-hmm. So there are multiple systems at play there, from the understanding to the body and to the sensational part of yourself. So I just kind of want to point to it in a more like logistical, logical way. And yeah, Elon and I have done a lot of really woo-woo stuff, but where our gift lies in taking that woo-woo and making it extremely practical. So I want to do that as much as I possibly can here. So look, we spent 4, maybe even 5 years of our business being like grunt work. Like, my first 2 years, 6 days a week, sometimes 7, 14 to 16 hours in front of the computer, just relentless study, right? Because I just saw the freedom that was available. And I'm like, I don't care if this takes 2 or 3 years here, because the next 30, 40 years of my life, you know, could be completely different from investing this kind of time. And I don't think most people are willing to do that, or maybe are just too scared. They are willing, but just have the fear. So in the beginning, we'll work with people much more on like conscious languaging, you know, like things that you're basically your words create your world. And if you're not aware of the way that you're using language, you're very adept to I should have, I would have, I could have. Mm. Right. And you're kind of like at odds with reality all the time. That not only causes resistance in the biomechanical system, but increases cortisol and stress and anxiety. And I don't know about you guys, but when I'm stressed and anxious, not a lot of good stuff is happening in my life. So it's understanding how to use language to actually not just reinterpret things, but actually the biological effects that that has on the pituitary gland, on certain hormones that are being released in the body. And you really do get a say in how that turns out. So, and if you guys aren't mapping this quite yet, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but people who talk about being unwell or being unhealthy are people who are generally unwell and unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And there's a lineage to that. So in the beginning, that's kind of what we work on. Once we feel the person is like really adept at that, we start moving much deeper. And it's kind of what Elon was talking about with like the replanting of the roots. Mm-hmm. The replanting of the roots has very little to do with your mind or logic or understanding, which for a lot of Westerners is a really difficult concept. Mm. Because we've learned, do a lot of shit.
Yep.
You know, have some shit, and then you'll be some way. Mm. But if so, it's like the do have be model, right? Like work really hard, have a lot of money, and then you'll be happy. Mm. Guys, look around. That does not work. Mm. Right? People who have a lot of money are not happy. And if the key to life and like success in life is really measured by joy, you know, we're kind of measuring it the wrong way, where like the Eastern philosophy is much more about start with your state, start with being. That being leads or pulls you into natural action, and those actions have you get that result, right? So there's a mindset, like a beingness to being a millionaire, a beingness to joy, a beingness to a man, right? And then like you be a man, you take actions a man does, you get the results a man gets, right? And it kind of works that way. So when we start looking at going into the body, you know, whether you're religious or whether you're an atheist, there are definitely examples we can go through here where you'll notice from your own personal experience that there does seem to be some kind of divine order to stuff. Like if you look at quantum physics and quantum mechanics, like they're not like, it's all chaos.
Yeah.
They're saying there's clearly a consciousness organizing things, right? So whether you call that God or whether you call that energy, I like to think of it as like a field. And within that field is the eternal data stream. And if you look at humans, and you even look at specifically the technology we're creating today, our technology is just an upload and download of information. It's always been that way. From radios to TV to now smartphones, we're receiving data that we can't see, right? It's invisible to us, into some kind of device that's then outputting information that you can also then receive and input into your body and then output as well. So all our technology is just kind of like a reflection of our own abilities. So we're really kind of like all walking antennas. And you can say that what we're calling the soul is like the frequency that antenna vibrates to and picks up those signals. So when you get like those intuitive hits or those moments of like inspired passion and action, like the moment you see your wife for the first time, you know, and people like have that strong pull, like what created that, you know? So what we look at is, how do we we've been trained around resiliency, right? We we clap at people who are resilient. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, except on the opposite side of that is that we're really, really terrible at receiving pleasure. And you see this a lot with people all the time. They seek and they do all these things to get attention. And then you walk up to somebody and you're like, hey, I got to tell you, you are amazing. Like you're blowing my mind right now. I've never met anybody like you. And if you've ever gotten a compliment like that, you're not sitting there going like, oh yeah, I am. You like shrink, right? Like as if you're not worthy of receiving that. And there's something at play there. And what that says to me is that our internal programming and the number one disease on the planet is a lack of self-worth. And it's this lack of self-worth that we're all walking around with that limits our ability to receive from this data stream, from this divine order that's basically just here to deliver experiences that guide you. So if you're not willing to receive, so you're like, I want $1 million, but your internal programming is I'm not worthy. There's no alignment there within the antenna. It's like the antenna is bent. said in the spiritual way, it's like your chakras aren't aligned. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more than just seven chakras, but in the most basic way, there's seven chakras right from your head, basically down to your like genitalia. And so like, if you think about the head, like the head needs to open in order to receive from the crown. In the Western world, we're great at that. We know how to open our crown, be creative, use our mind. Mm. But then like, as you get down to the throat, people like don't have a voice. You get to the heart is closed. You know, they're in their belly, like that intuition, they don't trust it. And then like, there's all this shit going on. So it's like, you get this idea, but it's almost like the signal can't make its way down because the chakras aren't in perfect alignment. Again, the antenna is bent. So our work is about allowing for you to have experiences that start creating alignment so you can like straighten out your antenna. And then you just start being able to open yourself up to receive information from this data stream. And it's like inspired thoughts, flow states, mm-hmm. Passionate action, like all that stuff becomes accessible. I'll tell you right now, like Elon and I don't do anything that we're not a fuck yes to.
Right. Right.
We don't even have a context of I have to do something. Everything is in the context of what do we get to do today? What do we get to create today?
Right.
So, right? It's, so it's like even paying your bills can be like an I have to pay my bills or I get to pay my bills.
Huh.
and that will change everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. While you were talking, there are a couple of thoughts. One was just around this concept of the ego, and you know we're. I'm with you there on, you know, mind and body connection and making sure or allowing yourself to be open to thinking in different ways through different systems. And I think one of the things that is now starting to move into the kind of in the West collective consciousness is the role or even the, you know, the kind of negative role of the ego, although misinterpreted in some ways. You know, a lot of what we hear subliminally still relates to what you talked about in terms of the having being, you know, then allows us to be the way we want. And I think that still speaks to kind of an older paradigm. So I have all this stuff. I've done all this stuff. I have all this stuff. And now I feel great about myself, but it's not built on a very solid foundation because as you guys have both experienced, you know, that can go away in one fell swoop of, you know, a major economic crisis or whatever. So the ego is to me, I think the ego is a very, you know, kind of dangerous thing because it's based on external stuff.
So, Just to say something about that, Ryan Holiday wrote a book called Ego is the Enemy.
Yes.
And I read it mostly out of curiosity and the fact that I actually like Ryan Holiday.
Yes.
Having said that, I thought it was the worst title ever. and I'll tell you why. I think if you would have given me that book 5-6 years ago, I would have thought it was absolutely brilliant. Mm. As we've gone through our evolution, you just said something and it just kind of like clicked for me. You know, most people create ego as the enemy.
Right.
And they have this notion that ego is evil.
Right.
And I think while that's a place of, that's a good foundation for people to start, it's not the accurate description of the ego as we see it today.
Okay.
And a lot of that actually changed when I had my kids. Hmm. And then Guy and I also, in the last couple of years, started playing with some plant medicines and going on these incredible spiritual journeys. Mm-hmm. And you get these incredible visions and downloads on yourself, like you see yourself as this object, very separate from you, and you get to just interact, and it's very, very profound.
Right.
And
these are like ayahuasca retreats.
Yes.
Right. Yep.
And one of the things that Guy and I both had experiences of, separate from each other, is this whole interaction with ego, as if ego was a child.
Huh.
And the way that most people and as a listener, just see if this maps onto you and this is the way you operate. most people that have some sort of level of awareness are like, oh, I have this voice in my head. That voice is not me. That voice is my ego. I'm not going to listen to that voice. That voice has led me to all these terrible things in my life, right? Like that kind of concept, which is okay as a starting point, because honestly, as long as you delineate the voice in your head from you, that's already a great place. That's you've separated yourself from 99% of the human population. The issue becomes this, like, if you imagine your ego is like a little inner child. Imagine yourself at 5 years old. And I don't know how much experience you have with kids, but if you were like to a five-year-old, fuck you, I'm not listening to you. I'm just going to lock you up in this room. Don't ever talk to me again. That's not really going to work out so well for you. Because at some point that kid's coming out. And when he's coming out, he is pissed. And he will wreak havoc in your life. And that's the way that mostly people operate with their ego.
Right.
Is they lock them in a dark room and are like, do not talk to me anymore.
Right. Rather than acknowledging.
Instead, if you want, like when we're talking about getting down into the roots, getting down into these old programs that you programmed in when you were 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. Right?
Right.
These are the programs that are creating and manifesting your day-to-day life today. Whether you're 30, 40, 50, 60, or 7 years old, it's still a program that you created when you were 5, 6, or 7 years old.
Right.
So the only way to truly heal that stuff and upgrade those programs so you can start manifesting a whole new life for yourself is to actually build a relationship with that ego. Start communicating with love and empathy and compassion to this little child who you can imagine. If you threw a six-year-old into some of your daily tasks today, you can really start to understand why they would be terrified, right? Like imagine a six-year-old walking into their boss's office to have a serious conversation. That's scary. So the more work we've kind of done internally where we've been able to go inside and have those interactions with that child and train them and show them a new way of operating, a new way of viewing the world, then guess what? Then the next time you go into that same situation, it's no longer afraid because it's learned the lesson. It's not like you sit there in the corner and shut the fuck up and I'm going to go do this thing. I don't want to hear from you, okay? Instead of like, hey, little guy, like, why are you so scared right now? And you just sit there and listen, and usually it'll say, it's like, well, the last time we did this, like, you remember when we did this with Dad, and Dad really flipped out, and then he hit us, or he yelled at us, and we cried in our room, like, I don't want to feel that again. You're like, oh, wow, okay. And then you start interacting that kind of conversation, like you'd be amazed at the kind of freedom and liberation that allows for, because now the next time you're in that situation, the little child's like not pulling at your pant leg, like, I'm so scared. It's like, okay, cool. We've done this. This is safe.
Right.
And it's totally changed the game.
Right. That's, yeah, that's really profound and actually a really good segue into the topic of risk and uncertainty, actually, because what you described can be very useful when approaching, you know, a major decision or something that's fraught with risk or something that you know is highly uncertain and can be very, you know, very, very impactful. I'd like to get both of your views on your philosophies on risk and risk taking and approaching uncertainty. And typically the kind of standard sort of definitions of both of these things, risks are things that, you know, they aren't happening now, but we know something about the likelihood of those things happening. And uncertainty is when we don't know even the likelihood of something happening. But you can, you know, you feel free to use them interchangeably or offer your own spin or take on these things. But very curious as to how you approach risk and uncertainty and how you advise your clients to do the same.
Interesting question, bro. I think we should maybe tell the story around the $250,000 at the end of this.
Yeah,
sure.
So I just want to like frame it first. I mean, look, to me, So I just want to tell you guys this, right? Like, Elon and I kind of have started operating free of logical thought. I know that sounds really ridiculous, but it's like, I look at the things that have been most profound in my life, they're completely illogical. Mm. Like, you know, we talked about Satori, like a moment of enlightenment. Mm. If you've experienced that kind of awakening, it's not logical. Mm. If you've gone and done some plant medicine work, it is some of the most profound spiritual experience you'll ever have. There's no logic in there. And there's this deep connectedness. And that's just one of many medicines that Elon and I have, I would say, I don't want to say lucky, but have been privileged to be part of, like those type of ceremonies. And it all points to the same thing. And it's this deeper interconnection that honestly the logical mind blocks us from. We've become extremely frontal lobe reliant, at least in this time in our history, where I think the ancestral generations of the past were much more in tune with the connection between mind, body, and heart. You know, and you could even call that the Holy Trinity, really, because those are the systems at play that really connect us to the greater field. And there's something to be said. Let's look at it this way. There, if we're talking about the data stream that I had mentioned before,
yep.
And there's three ways. If you were like in a river, right? Like, and we're gonna imagine this data stream is like this really fast moving river. There's kind of three ways to operate in the river. We can either be like, this river is scaring me. I want to swim upstream, and you're gonna like, you know, do your little swim, and you're gonna get exhausted because you're going against everything that's in this flow, trying to control the outcome. And that's how humans right now seem to be designed. We're like, we want to control everything. Anything that makes us feel out of control feels risky, feels scary. We don't want to be part of it. And then it's like people wonder why they're exhausted when they come home. It's like, well, you've just gone against everything inside of you and all your intuition and everything that makes you passionate. And you said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go get a paycheck. So now you're fucking exhausted all the time. You're unhappy and you don't know why. There's then like the next part of people who begin to get awakened and then start understanding a concept that's called surrender. Now, most people think of surrender, they think of giving up. I truly do not mean giving up. I mean just like a full acceptance of all that is presented in front of you right now. Because honestly, if you're truly present, no matter what circumstance you're currently dealing with, whether it's ecstatic joy or whether it's complete depression, how else could it be in this exact moment than the way that it is? So it's like really engaging and like getting that sensation within your body, not an understanding of surrender, a feeling of surrender. And those people, like, they're like, okay, you know what? I'm going to start trusting this flow. And the river starts moving really, really fast. So on the way down again, you try to control it a little bit and you end up like bumping into a lot of rocks and getting a lot of scrapes as you kind of, you know, move your body around too much. And then they're like the third level where you're just like, I totally trust. I'm just going to sit in this flow. And you're just like, you just go with it. And whatever shows up, you're like, thank you. And I'll take some of that. And that's awesome. Thank you for this. Thank you for that. And it doesn't mean every experience is like omnipositive, but you start seeing the beauty in the quote unquote negativity and how there's a relationship between these two things that you can't break apart. So what we teach, and then bro, you could tell the story if you're called to tell it. What we teach is that, you know, you have this intuitive pull, this almost like internal guidance system. We call it your guiding lights. You will notice that the things that you truly want to do in life, when you even say yes to them or when you move forward, what you're going to experience is fear, right? Because you don't have programming for this thing yet. So, of course, the mind is it's a survival machine, right? Like your ego is really a survival machine. And what it looks for is predictability. Mm-hmm. That's why if you're in a shitty relationship where the man's beating you, you keep coming back because the mind doesn't care about how you feel about it. It cares that you survived it. If you survived it, the mind goes, let's do that again. And it will subconsciously program you to stay in that environment because it goes, well, this keeps happening. We keep surviving. Let's keep doing it. And that's what it does. So like you'll notice again that you're afraid of the things that you really want to do. So you can start using this sensation of fear as almost like, that is where I want to go. So now instead of moving away from risk, moving away from fear, you start programming yourself that fear is the guiding post, is the light. Where you're afraid of is where I should move towards. And that's a and that's a sensation of building up courage. Now, when people think of courage, they generally think of an absence of fear. I'm not talking about an absence of fear, courage. I'm saying fear is present, and you program yourself that even when you experience fear, you still take action. That's courage. That's the reason why, you know, if me and you are in a burning building, we run out. And firemen see a burning building, they run in. It's not that they're experiencing any less fear. It's that they've developed the capacity to have courage, and in the face of fear, they take action. And right. And I believe that if you actively participate and work on that in your life, you will have everything that you possibly want.
Right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, but it's hard to act on.
it's also hard to conceptualize, right?
Yeah.
So like with training, you know, it's not about like, oh, I believe this, now I believe that, and then like that doesn't work out the next day and you start making yourself bad and wrong, guilting yourself and punishing yourself because that didn't work out. It's about creating like a trap door in your mind and specifically being aware of sensations in the body so that when they arise, you go, oh shit, for the last 35 years, this has been my programming. And when I do that, I can see how the result works out. So if I do that now, it's predictable that I'm going to get that result again. I don't want that result. I want a new result. So it's like as that sensation starts arising in the body, you're like, oh, there it is. And it starts being like seeing a train from really, really far away. And now you have this like long period of time to be like, you know what? I'm not going to get hit by this train this time. We're going to just step aside.
Right.
Where most people, it's like they don't even know the train is there and they're just getting nailed by it. And, you know, and they just keep getting this impact of their life that they don't really want. So again, that's when we talk about like consciousness, that's what we're saying. It's like, it's a remembrance of things that you've become blind to. There's really nothing to discover in this world. We're in a process of remembrance all the time. And all these processes, spiritual practices, medicines, all of it is just to help you remember who you truly are.
Yeah. So you were saying, you know, it's hard to act on, to which I would say you act on it every single day. The difference is that we act on it, for the majority of humanity, we act on it unconsciously. So what we're talking about, you've done. Every single one of you has already done this act. There was a thing at one point in your life that you were absolutely terrified of. And most likely it was something that you kind of, you know, you had that initial pull, that initial surge, your heart said, this sounds so good, like this sounds so exciting, I'm gonna go do that thing.
Yep.
And then instantly, like in a matter of no more than 10 seconds, what happened? Your brain came in and went, are you fucking kidding me? We're gonna die if we do this. This is so scary. We're gonna become homeless. We're gonna become divorced. We're gonna lose this. The world is gonna open up and eat you whole. Like all this stuff comes up, right? And you did it anyway. And the second after you do that thing, that you were just like the second before you were so terrified, you go do that. You know, jumping out of a plane is such a good example because it's I've done it 5 or 6 times at this point, and I have to tell you, at no point does it become easier. Like,
right.
I know how good it's going to feel. And yet, every time I'm strapped in and I'm going up that rinky-dinky plane and they open that door, guess what happens?
Yeah.
My brain and inner child freaks out. Like, you're not going to throw me out of this plane. You know, like, does all that thing. And then every time you land on the ground, you feel like Superman.
Right.
Why? Right. Because you just did something that like the second before you deemed impossible, and now you get to know yourself as this whole new you with this whole new ability that just seconds or minutes before was not there. We've all done this. Every single human being has done this. It's how you've created every new ability in your life. When you took that job and you didn't know what the heck you were gonna do, when you moved to a different state, country, city, apartment, when you said yes to getting married, when you said yes to having a kid, when you had a kid, like all of it is that moment. And we do it all the time. And so what there is to get, and this is something that we work really, really intensely with our clients, is if you can just reprogram the process and not focus so much on the pain and the uncertainty and the overwhelm and all that stuff that happens, because that's the natural effect of being a human being. You will never remove that. We don't remove fear. We help you fear less. And when you realize that that's like all mechanism, and what you focus on instead is like, I know I'm going to go through the mechanism part because that's what it's going to do. Like that's like saying a dog should not bark. Your human mind, that's what it does, right? Mm. If you instead focus on the outcome and you go, look, every time I conquer one of my fears, I know myself as someone I've never known myself to be. I gain a new ability. My life expands. I manifest what I want in my life. And you just start programming like, that's what I aim for. Then guess what you start doing? You start looking for the moments of fear. And so a great question to ask yourself is, what scares the shit out of me right now? And go do that thing. And that's how you want an amazing, epic, like massive life. Keep conquering your fears.
Right. Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds like a very profound way of living your life. And actually, what's the $250,000 story? I think we lost that somewhere, but
yeah, this will drive the people who don't believe in woo-woo crazy, but I'm gonna say it anyway. So I believe like a morning and night meditation practice for anybody who really wants to tap into this stuff is not even recommended. It's mandatory.
Yeah, I'm fully on board with that. I think that's not even woo-woo. That's a great practice for everyone to be doing. But
I think that's been more easily adopted by Western culture. I think even like 40% of corporations these days offer some form of meditation.
Absolutely.
And mostly because they quantify that they make more money and that they're people more productive. But even so, I don't mind that, right? Like if yoga, meditation, all these practices get into corporate culture, that'd be amazing because they'll be much more quickly adopted. And just to frame it, like, ideally in the morning, you're meditating for alignment. And at nighttime, you're meditating for activation. Uh-huh. And if you don't take time to quiet yourself and go within, there's just certain things that won't make themselves known to you, specifically certain universal truths that are really important. I sat in a 10-day silent meditation about a year and a half ago. I can't wait to do it again, actually. And I think in 10 days, you meditate close to like 120 hours, something like that. And similar to what plant medicine will show you, we can self-activate through breath work, through medicine, and really start tapping into this greater field. So I'm meditating this one morning, and again, whatever you believe, I hear this thing. I don't want to say a voice, but like I get these intuitive hits. They usually come as like simple sentences, and then usually I sit and I write, and this information gets channeled through me. If anybody's interested in that stuff, you can definitely find my stuff online, either my personal website or on Facebook. I write like these channeled messages, and even I have to go back and read them because I don't know what's being written, and I learn from them. So I get this hit that just says you get to receive $250,000, and I'm like, huh? So I call up Elon in the morning. And I'm like, hey, bro. I'm like, look, I meditated this morning. I'm like, I feel like we get to receive $250,000. So Elon didn't quite know my experience. So he goes into, okay, that sounds great. He's like, well, what do you want to do about that? And we start like for 15 minutes, we're like, well, we could do this. We can do more of that. Right. Again, do, have, be, be. Right. Mm. And when you do notice that you're in the world of more, better, different, I could do more. I could do this different. Right. Mm. And what you end up getting is more, better, different of the same results. That's why people feel very hamster wheeled effect. So I kind of stopped the conversation. I'm like, no, dude, that's not what I meant. I'm like, I don't want to do anything. I'm like, I didn't say we need to do stuff to get $250,000. I heard we get to receive $250,000. We don't have to do anything. I'm like, I know how this shit works. I'm going to put it to test with something big. You know, are you on board? He goes, yep. So, and Elon, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I know I might mess up the story a little bit, but I don't think it'll matter. We get a call from our accountant the next day. And they tell us to they're doing something, and they end up finding something wrong with our merchant account. And they're like, call your merchant, find out what's going on. We end up calling our merchant, and it turns out when we called them that for 2016, They've been withholding 28.5% of all our earnings. And the reason for that is we had reincorporated our company in early 2015. And for whatever reason, the EIN number was just not the right number that they had in the system. And they told us furthermore, so there's $58,913 sitting there that we can't claim until we actually file our 2017 taxes. So we have to wait a year. And they go, furthermore, we just checked, and it looks like since February 2015, this has been happening. So pretty much 2 years of profits are sitting there, that almost 30% that we haven't been able to collect. So Elon calls me. He's like kind of, you know, upset. He's like, hey, they're holding all this money. I said, hey, look, we're not like strapped for cash. And it's cool. Like a year from now, I don't know, maybe there's like $50,000, $60,000, $90,000 sitting there, depending on what 2015 looks like. So we kind of estimate that based on our profits from the year before, that there's about like $35,000 sitting from 2015 also.
Right.
So there's like $90,000. That's like next day. And I'm like, hey, whatever. So I kind of like, I kind of wake up the next morning. I think to myself, I'm like, you know what? This doesn't make any sense. I'm like, I know I sent him that info. Sure enough, I like log into the merchant account. The company name has been, you know, reestablished. They have the new address. They have our new phone number. And the only thing that's wrong is EIN. So I'm like, this is human error. This has nothing to do with us. I find some evidence for it. We send this like packet showing them that we did send them this info. They concur and they say, hey, look, you just have to fill out this tax form and we can actually get it released for you this year. So that ends up happening. A few days later, one of our year-long clients comes to do like a work day, like suspend a day with Elon at his house. Mm-hmm. And it's this guy, Michael, and Elon's telling him the story. And Michael's like, oh, you guys are looking for capital. He's like, I don't know if we're looking, but, you know, we're supposed to receive $250,000. He goes, I think I have a guy in North Carolina for you that would want to invest in your company. Hmm. So an hour later, Elon is on the phone with this guy in North Carolina. And the guy is, bro, is it $150,000?
Hmm. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like, I'm willing to give you guys $150,000, you know, great rate, the whole nine. And the guy's like willing to do the deal like almost on the spot, I guess, just based on the relationship he had with Michael. And he's like, well, Elon actually offers, why don't they meet? And the guy wanted to come to New York. And he's like, no. He's like, I'll come down to you to North Carolina. So the guy's like, great, all right, come on down. So Elon was going to go like that weekend basically and go meet him. So he calls my parents and tells them this whole story. And then, well, it doesn't tell them the story. He says, can you guys watch the kids for the weekend? And my parents are like, why do you need to watch him? He's like, well, I'm heading down to North Carolina. What for? Tells him the story. And my parents say, don't go to North Carolina. And he's like, why not? He goes, my parents have all this equity sitting around that nothing's happening with. They're like, we've wanted to give you guys money for quite a while. Huh. We just didn't know how. And we didn't know that you needed it. So they're like, why don't we give you money instead? And it's like, on an equity line, it's like a 2.5% loan basically, which is like free money, right?
Yeah.
So he's like, my dad tells him, we'll get back to you and let you know how much is there. And it was ended up being $168,000. So if we did the math and it like turned out with our estimate of what 2015 was that we were at like $249,870 basically. And that happened in under 10 days from that creation.
Wow.
So, look, for the skeptical mind that's probably listening to this right now, a lot of you guys are going, bullshit, oh, you guys are so lucky, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. That's cool, and you're allowed to believe whatever you want to believe, and I'm telling you that that belief that you have right now or whatever resistance you might have to hearing that story is the reason that you're not tapping into that thing yourself. And because you're not even looking to tap into it, your cognitive dissonance is going, bullshit, you got to work hard, blah, blah, blah. And what I'm telling you this year is Elon and I ran an experiment because when I started looking at my company, I started thinking to myself, working harder has not earned me more money. In fact, every time I've gone on vacation is the times I make the most money when I let it all go. Hmm. So we started off the year going, I want to consciously work less, feel more, create more. Hmm. And we've made more profits this year and are in an astronomical growth. The relationships that have come in, it's like when you have it in your mind that like here's what I want and here's how it's supposed to come to me, you're telling me with your silly little brain in a universe of infinite potential and possibility that you can predict how something is going to happen to you? Bullshit, right? So it's like it's more about like creating – getting in the sensation of what it feels like to already have that thing, because that's the vibration that pulls it to you, and then giving it up into the eternal consciousness to allow it to deliver it to you in whatever is in like your highest, in your highest service. Guys, we don't know what's good for us because we're limited beings. And it's impossible for this mind to conceptualize infinity or infinite potential or infinite possibility or quantum mechanics or any of that stuff. We can theorize, but we really can't get into it. And if you don't believe me, you know, there's, I would just tell you, just start running experiments. Like for a week, just focus on something, feel it in your body, and whatever resistance comes up in your mind, just let it, keep letting it go, and then you tell me what's happening in your life.
I might try running an experiment or two, Guy, based on that story. I think one of the ways that I'm already thinking about the cognitive dissonance around that is just that somehow perhaps your subconscious, because we don't know how all the layers of the mind and how it works, that your subconscious kind of works through stuff in the background, and maybe there are bits of information that you're lining up, your brain's lining up somewhere somehow, and you don't really know how that's working, but it's making these connections and it's causing you to act and think in a different way, and perhaps we can't tap that if we're in a kind of constant problem solving mode. So as I hear that story, for me, that's kind of how I think about it, and maybe that works for people who have trouble with that cognitive dissonance around wishing for something and then it happens.
Well, we now know that there's a conscious mind, we know there's a subconscious mind, we know there's a super subconscious mind, and like I think the super subconscious is what we would probably derive as where the soul is, and then your subconscious is not just this lifetime of information, it's all your lifetimes of information. And then it's like the thing leading the power plant is the conscious mind. So like it's prudent to think of the subconscious mind as like this army that never sleeps and always goes to achieve the goal. And it's the signals that you're sending down from the conscious mind to the subconscious mind, the things that you put on repeat, are the seeds that you're planting in the subconscious mind. And the subconscious is just going to go carry out those programmings. Your conscious mind does not create reality. Your subconscious mind does.
Right.
And I'll just say this really quick. There's this beautiful case study about like anxiety and free will and all these different things. And they'll put people in the chair and they'll give them like electric shocks. So they'll give them the first one, and then they'll tell them that we're going to increase these shocks over time, and the last one's going to be the strongest. Right? Now that creates immediate anxiety in the body, obviously. But they give them a choice and they say, hey, look, you know, you have a choice. We can either do it the way we told you, or we can give you the strongest shock to begin with. And in overwhelming numbers, people will pick the strongest shock, like the 90th percentile. We'll pick the strongest shock first. Why? Because people, the anxiety that exists in the body is worse than the physical sensation of that shock. You understand? So they will take that shock to relieve the anxiety. And that anxiety is being formed in the subconscious mind based on all your previous experiences with pain, shock, unexpected things happening to you, right? Like, and all that stuff is formed and it happens in microseconds. So if you take that out into your life, everywhere where you have anxiety, that's living in the subconscious part of yourself. So if you're in a relationship and you think, oh no, they're going to leave me, and then you start getting anxiety about that, notice how the conscious thinking doesn't keep them around. In fact, your subconscious mind will carry out the duty of setting it up so that they leave you, so that you can relieve the anxiety in your body, because them leaving you just propagates that story more. You get to be right about it, and it relieves the anxiety, and that's more in line with how the body wants to work than about them staying with you. So it's like, and we externalize that saying, oh my God, they left me, and we become a victim of that. And it's like, you just missed all the stuff your subconscious did, all the little touch points you made all along the way, these last few months or last few years, to make sure that they leave you so that you can relieve that anxiety. And and our subconscious is so powerful that if you're not actively invoking, like uploading information and downloading information into it, it's running amok, because it is that upset 3 to 70-year-old that was precognition, basically, which is also why you can't program it with cognition. Because this part of yourself is precognition, which means it's all in the field. and it's all in the field, right? And this is why it's just so important to become aware of these things so that you do have a say in what kind of programming and what kind of life this subconscious is going to carry out for you. Because things like disease, shitty relationships, relationships to money that you can never seem to make it because you're all sabotaging yourself, all that lives in that space. Hmm. And we really do get a say.
Hmm. Well, that's super profound. And I know that we probably need to wrap it up pretty soon here. But I'm sure that I've got some listeners that are intrigued by this. And I guess I'm wondering where can they, well, if there's one thing that maybe my listeners are interested in, or one piece of advice around what to do if they're thinking about making a decision or a change, or just one thing that you would counsel someone to do, what would that be?
I'm going to go back to what I said before, which is ask yourself this one question: what would scare the shit out of me right now? Mm-hmm. And then do that one thing, mm-hmm. or at least take a step in that direction. Because mm-hmm. every time you are able to dismantle these programs of I can't do this, I'm not good enough or smart enough or worthy enough, or every time I ask a girl out, it blows up in my face. Every time you dismantle one of those, it no longer has that same power over you.
Right. Mm.
And that's the way you liberate yourself to be the person that you know you are capable of being. It's like the Michelangelo David thing, right? Like, what did you do, Michelangelo? I just chipped away everything that wasn't David. There's a lot of stuff that you've piled on over the last few decades that isn't who you actually are. Hmm. You've just trained yourself to believe, because then you know, in order to hold that in place, you have to create a reality that justifies all that way, right? So obviously your outside world and external world looks that way because you've programmed the inside world to be that way. There is no way the outside world is. There is only the way you are inside, and that gets manifested outside. And so doing these little things every single day will unleash who you are on the world.
Mm. Very cool. Where can people, I'm sure that people who want to continue this and find out a little bit more about those little things and about yourselves, where can they find you guys?
So two really, really cool things. One, we just launched and we're super, super pumped about it. I'll tell you that in a second. The easiest place to find out about everything going on in our world is just you can check out our website, mm-hmm. satoriprime.com. It's SATORI prime.com. And then the second thing, which we're super pumped about, if you want to be a part of this conversation ongoingly, inside of a community with other people having this conversation and really just unraveling and remembering who they actually are, we just launched a really cool app. It's both on Android and iOS. You could just go to app.satoriprime.com, mm-hmm. And you can get it. It's totally free. And when you get it, you actually get a 10-part, 10-day little mini-series that gives you a great insight about who we are, how we help people, and how we can help you remember who you truly are. Hmm. And then once you're in there, you can communicate with us. We have a forum. It's really, really cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Cool. Was there anything that we missed that you think is worth mentioning at this stage?
No, I thought that was excellent.
I'll just add in one more thing to listeners. I believe that we're on the cusp of a major human revolution, evolution. I think that we're going to see some pretty large global events probably in the next 3 to 5 years. I just want people to know that are listening that, you know, wherever you are in your life, you might be listening to everything we're saying here and going, who the fuck are these guys? Whether that's a good or a bad thing in your mind. And I would just tell you, like, what if you see where we're at and you're like, holy crap, the worst thing anybody can do is compare themselves to anybody else. Nothing sucks out the joy of life like comparison. and personally, like, I genuinely mean this. I think everyone is just filled with potential and genius. And there are certain people, because of this precognition type of programming, probably hear that car alarm. yeah, you know, like, just have never even given themselves the opportunity to step into their genius. Humans are such beautiful creatures when they allow themselves to be. And I really hope that something on here inspired you to, like, go within and just, like, discover your gifts. I don't think there's ever been a time in history like there is right now, because you have access to information and experiences in such a high volume that can awaken your spirit in such a profound way. And we see that with our people every single day. And I really, 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 really hope if any part of this was like, you're like, yes, I fucking want that, go get it. Not, even if it's not with us, just go get it. Go find something that lights you up and sparks you. Invest the time in becoming masterful of the things that really matter to you. And that's where the joy of life is. You know, like, give up the survival mindset. Give up that it has to be about fucking resiliency, and go seek how much pleasure that you can actually receive in this lifetime. That's worth a 1, 3, 5, 10 year investment in something, because the rest of your life will thank you for it, and the people around you will thank you for it, and it's just worth it. Just go for it.
That's really beautifully put. So, Guy and Elon, thank you very much. I really enjoyed this. This was awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today, and I wish you all the best, and certainly will ask my listeners to check you out, and I'll certainly keep very close tabs on what you guys are doing, and so it was great to connect. Wonderful opportunity to do that. Thank you so much.
Beautiful. Thanks, Ben. Thank you for the space so much.
Thanks, guys. I hope you guys found that enjoyable and stimulating. And check out the show notes, as always. And as always, subscribe to the All Things Risk podcast if you haven't yet done so. I have a few episodes I'm set to record over the next 2 to 3 weeks, which I think is going to make for a great lineup for the end of summer and into the autumn. And I'm working on a few other things as well. So if you don't want to miss anything, just go to allthingsrisk.co.uk. And not only can you find all the ways in which you can subscribe to the show, but you can get our newsletter and not miss any extra stuff that will be coming soon. Any feedback, I'd also love to hear from you, allthingsrisk@gmail.com. You can hit me up on Twitter, @riskthings is the handle. Again, would love to hear from you. We will be back with another episode next week. In the interim, and as always, don't forget, risk is life.